This Edgar Profiles podcast is supported by Ping. Edgar is an association of national federations formed in the year 2000 to develop and encourage initiatives which raise the awareness of golf, both as a participation and competitive sport for individuals with disability. For more information about Edgar, please visit edgargolf.com. Your host for this episode is Tony Bennett. Ping. Play your best.
Aussie Stephen Prior comes across as being a carefree, sports-mad and practical young fellow in his youth. Life was good, school was going well, and Stephen played sport at every opportunity in a country famous for its outdoor lifestyle. Stephen and his family would often make the trip to Forster, some 350 kilometres north of Sydney, and it was here, when with a group of friends enjoying some fishing and water sports, that the trajectory of his life shifted. The tow rope off the rear of a speeding boat got caught around his wrist while water skiing. Seconds later, as he fell from the skis, the line, now looped around his wrist, pulled tight and ripped off Stephen's right hand. After hearing this story, it is easy to understand that even if Stephen's mouth turns to cotton and his throat gets dry under pressure, you can be sure that his head will be clear to deal with whatever is in front of him. Please enjoy my conversation with Stephen Prior.
Ping. Play your best.
Okay, so Stephen, good to meet you and have a bit of a chat with you. I know you're in Sydney, Australia right now, and tell me what's it like there just at the minute.
Sunday evening, about 7 o'clock. Sun's just about to go down on a beautiful day. It was quite windy earlier. Went down the golf course and had a bit of a look around, but it really wasn't a day to play. So it's blowing about 40 kilometres per hour. So yep, happy enough now. It's still calmed down and I should be out there now, to be honest.
I've heard that it gets pretty windy down there, doesn't it, this time of the year?
It does, yeah. So my course is Long Reef Golf Club. We're right on the coast, so I get quite a bit of the wind there, yeah.
I bet you do. And you've played quite a lot of sports, I think, haven't you, when you were young? And I heard that you played quite a lot of Aussie rules football and tennis. So what was it about those sports that you really liked, Stephen?
I suppose two different things. So the Aussie rules football was really a team sport, really into the team sports. Enjoyed, I suppose, the camaraderie of having, you know, all my mates playing and us going out and doing it all together. The tennis was more of an individual sport, so quite enjoyed that as well. So challenging myself against others and sort of the best around the area.
It's a pretty mad sport country, really, isn't it, Australia? It seems like everybody plays sports. It's very much an outdoor kind of lifestyle as well that you've got there.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I suppose the weather has a lot to do with it, especially the Sydney area, Sydney and Melbourne, massive sporting capitals. There's so much to do, so many different choices in sports. So it's always good to get out there and put the kids out there, and yeah, it's fantastic.
Tell me about your family. Did they play quite a lot of sports as well?
Yeah. So I've got two kids. I've got a 12-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son. Isabella's a soccer player. She loves getting out on the field with her mates, plays winter and summer soccer. And my son's actually the same. He plays soccer as well at the moment, but he's looking at Aussie rules probably next winter, I'd say, for us.
So you started to play golf around about 10 years of age. So who was it that first put a club into your hands?
It was my dad, actually. So my dad wasn't a huge golfer, but it was something, I suppose, we could do together. He worked 6 days a week, so Sundays we sort of got out every once in a while and had a bit of a hit. I'm a left-hander, so he was a right-hander, so he bought me one golf club, a 7-iron, which I still have to this day.
Really?
Yeah. And it's a brilliant little club. I still take it out for a chip and a putt every once in a while, so, yeah, good fun.
And I think when you started to play, I think you said that golf was more of a kind of a holiday activity rather than a serious sport. So why was that?
I suppose, well, mainly for my sort of age group, there was no one really playing golf at the time. I found in school holidays, a lot of my friends would go away and we'd sort of stay around. So I just popped down the hill to the local golf club, go and play there pretty much all day. It was either that or surfing. I did a bit of surfing when I was younger as well. But golf sort of, when I was a bit younger, was just easy. I could, mum and dad had just brought me down the golf club and I'd sit there and play there all day. I did 72 holes in a day a couple of times. So
really?
Quite enjoyed it. Yeah, just go round and round and round.
Yeah. I think we've all done that, haven't we? We've all had a bit of a golf-a-thon on one day.
Absolutely, yeah.
You lost your hand at the start of your final year in school. So can you explain to me what happened?
Yeah, so we go away every year up to Foster, which is about 350 kilometres north of Sydney. Beautiful area, fishing, water sports, all those sort of things. We did a lot of water skiing. We'd go up there to water ski and I was sort of mucking around with some friends and I managed to get myself caught in the rope. And then when I sort of fell in the water, it looped around my wrist and ripped my hand off. So unfortunately, it wasn't recoverable. We could never find the hand again. But they believed they could have sewed it back on, but obviously we couldn't find it. It was really murky water underneath. And unfortunately, that was it.
I mean, how do you deal with that? Are you, how old were you at the time?
17, or just, 17, about to turn 18. At the time, it was a bit of a shock. It was a funny thing because we had a PE teacher at school, so used to be a sports teacher, and he actually mentioned that there was a shark attack. He used to be a Bondi lifesaver, had a shark attack there. The gentleman got his leg bit off. The first thing that the teacher did was actually grab a bit of rope, pull it tight around his leg, and obviously stop the blood flow. And funny enough, when I lost my hand, the first thing I thought of was that. I actually ripped the cord out of my wetsuit, tied it around my arm and pulled it tight, and that was, all thanks to him. It was quite interesting that you think of things like that at that sort of time, but didn't really go into any panic. Didn't really hurt. It was a funny thing. It was more shock, I suppose, I went into and just got on with it.
Have you always been as phlegmatic as that? I mean, that's a pretty pretty matter-of-fact approach that you seem to have there. Is that in part of your DNA?
Oh, I don't know. maybe at a crisis, yeah.
Well, tell me, so obviously your life changed afterwards and... Would that have been you mentioned you're a left-handed golfer, but I think you're right-handed by birth, is that right?
Yeah, so all my delicate things like writing, things like that were all right-handed. All my sport was left-handed. So I used to kick the football left-handed. I bowled left-handed in cricket, but batted right-handed, so I was sort of mixed up anyway, so... I had to relearn everything again. In the HSC year at school, wasn't a great time to relearn how to write, but I sort of got through it reasonably well.
You just made an interesting point, I guess, there is that, I mean, I think about some of the players that came from your part of the world, not this actually isn't Australia, this was from New Zealand, but maybe one of the best known left-handed golfers ever, Bob Charles, was actually right-handed, so... Seems like there's quite a lot of crossover down in that part of the world. So you obviously had to learn to write again. You struggled, I think, a little bit probably in that last year, as you've just alluded to.
Yeah.
So, but what kind of emotions were you going through at that time? Because after you've got over the shock of losing your hand and you've gone through the practicalities of dealing with probably cleaning up the, I guess it would be classed as an amputation, even though it wasn't a clinical amputation. So you've had to clean all that up. So what kind of emotions were you going through at that time?
I suppose the biggest one was frustration. But going into the HSC year, I sort of had expectations on myself to go to university, I suppose become something of myself, if you know what I mean, at university, looking for, you know, a reasonable score in sort of the 80s to 90s HSC-wise out of 100. And because I couldn't keep up in class, I found myself lagging behind. So my scores obviously dropped. Didn't have much help from the teachers board in Australia at the time. Obviously that's changed a lot, but at the time they didn't really give me much guidance or much help. So there was a lot of frustration, I suppose, in that first year. One thing I suppose I didn't mention was when I was in hospital with my hand, I just basically got bored with the hospital. Within, I think, 4 days, I was actually out swinging a golf club. So just swinging it one-handed. I just thought, what can I do next? And I was always sort of one of those characters that just sort of got on with things. So, yeah, I thought, go out and hit a golf ball and, yeah, hit it reasonably well. So I suppose that was my new drive in life.
So you've got to tell me more about that. So you've gone out of hospital, and what did you do? You went to the local driving range, or what, to the golf club, or how did that work?
No, local golf club. Down the golf club and played around. So I think I shot 115 or something like that off the stick. Just one-handed, first time I've ever sort of swung one-handed, so I was pretty impressed with it. So.
I'm sure you were. I'm sure other people were impressed as well. So yeah. Literally within the space of 4.5 hours or 4 hours or whatever it took you to go and play that round, or 3.5 hours, hopefully, that's a much better time to play. By the end of that, then you were pretty committed that you were going to be playing the game just one-handed and just keep going.
Oh, well, it sort of took me a bit longer than that to realise golf was my sport. I went and played another season of Aussie Rules, not overly successfully, but really enjoyed it. By that time, I suppose, the tennis had sort of wrapped up. So I was looking for something else to do. Drinking, obviously, was one thing at that age. I turned 18, 2 months after I lost my hand, so that was quite handy. So golf, I suppose, for me, came in probably 2 or 3 years after I lost my hand. Like, I mucked around one-handed and wasn't really enjoying it. And then I thought, okay, how am I going to fix this? And managed to go into a prosthetist and find a suitable golf arm. So that really sort of drove me from there.
So where is the amputation and where is the prosthetist now?
So I've got it just here. So I've obviously through the wrist. So I've got quite a long stump.
Yep.
Still got a couple of rows of wrist bones there, so I sort of get a bit of motion through the arm.
Yeah.
This is my prosthesis now. So this part here was bought from the States. It's one of the TRS products. I've actually changed a few things, so I've readjusted angles and things like that to suit my swing.
Right.
In the middle here, it's actually got truck hydraulic hose, which gives it the wrist flex that I need, and then just a couple of clamps to clamp it on. But just slide it on. I can pull it tight through just a little bit of Velcro in the middle there.
Okay, yeah,
got
it.
And just wrap it round, so it works quite well. And then just slide the club through. Let's have a look, see if I can get in the shot. So just slip the club down through through the thing there. And if I pull down on there, it tightens up the rear of the club and you can actually get put a pretty good swing on it.
Okay. So when did you start to play with the prosthetis? Because obviously you started those first few rounds were with just one hand, and then obviously you then obviously changed back to having two hands effectively on the golf club.
Yeah, yeah.
So when was that?
I'm trying to think, actually. It would have been when I was probably 19 or 20. It would have been about the age of 20. Found obviously the prosthesis. It was reasonably suitable. At the time, I wasn't a member of a golf club or anything like that, so it was still a social sport for me. Started playing a bit more and more, really enjoying it, and then probably 2 years after that, joined up at a golf club. So, same golf club I'm at now, Longreef.
Longreef, yeah. And so, You're still a member there today, but can you go back to when you first joined, which obviously I think was in 1997, I think you mentioned to me previously. Yeah. So how did the players there accept you both as a person and as a golfer with disability?
I was reasonably shy back then, funny enough. I'm not as shy now. But I had a couple of friends there, probably older friends. They would have been in their 50s at the time, and I was still sort of mid-20s, that were playing there. I played with them, I suppose, for the first year or so and didn't really go around meeting anyone that much. After that, I found a few people my age that joined up afterwards. Sounded like a bit of a joke, but there was a Scottishman, an Irishman, and an Englishman.
Sounds like the start of a very good joke.
Exactly. Yep. So that was our group, and we played, pretty much every week together. And from there, I suppose that group has expanded to being probably 30 or 40 of us that go away on trips together and still really enjoy each other's company, swap through groups and so on.
So you play the majority of your golf with able-bodied players, and I know that you play for the club's first team. So yes. How important do you think it is that players with disability play golf with everyone rather than just with golfers with disability?
Oh, I think it's amazing. It's got to happen that way. One, I suppose, because we can show off what we can do. And the best thing about golf is it's that type of sport where you can compete with everyone due to the handicap system. So I suppose that's one thing that really lured me to golf. I just find that, no matter how good, how bad, how much skill you have, how much luck you have, you can always compete on your day against anyone. So, it's a brilliant game like that. And whether you're able-bodied, unable, disabled, whatever you are, so anyone can compete. So.
You mentioned a minute ago that we obviously have the golf handicap system, which kind of provides that level playing field for everybody to compete and just have a good time. So low handicap players can play with real beginners. But you've achieved a golf handicap of +1 as your lowest mark, and that's something that less than perhaps even 1% of all the golfers in the world would ever achieve. So tell me how you got to reach such a high level, and have you worked with any coaches to help you get to that level?
I've never had a coaching session in my life, so that's one thing that I suppose I'm proud and unproud of at times. I suppose about 10 years ago, I had quite a good job where I had a bit of freedom in the afternoons. Sort of worked quite early in the mornings and then played golf in the afternoon. Was playing 3 or 4 days a week. And obviously, I suppose the more time you spend, the better you get in most of the time. So managed to get the handicap down to probably the 2 mark at that stage, from about sitting at about 8. Uh-huh. And from there, I suppose I've just progressed a little bit further. And with the new hand, well, not new so much anymore, but with the handicapping system in Australia now, same as the States, and I'm sure it's probably the same as Europe now, it's quite fluctuates a lot more than it used to. So I found myself down at +1 and going, God, how do I play off this? So it was quite interesting, but played off +1, I think, for about 6 months down around that area.
+1, you'd probably be maybe one of the best players in the club, I guess, or if not the best player.
Oh, no, we've got quite a strong club. We've actually got a player off +4, a couple off +3, and so I would have been in the top 5 or 6. But, we've got a really strong club when it comes to A grades. So.
And you enjoy playing in that team, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Love competing against other people. It's quite interesting when you come up against an able-bodied player in a pennants team and, they come up against me and go, how the hell does this guy, play off scratch +1, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you get out and hit the ball, and it can actually freak some people out too, which is great. Little mental edge that I have on them.
Yeah, I guess nobody wants to play against you. I mean, everybody in the other team is going to look and say, just give me anybody, but don't give me him.
Yep, absolutely.
You played your first amputee tournament, I think, in 2002, and that was run by, I guess he's a legend of amputee golf and certainly Australian golf, that's for sure, Jeff Nicklaus. And you played at the Lakes Golf Club, which is his own backyard. So please explain to me what playing in that event was like and how it affected your view of golf for the disabled.
Well, I suppose the lead up to that was more interesting than the tournament itself. A gentleman up at my local driving range knew Jeff quite well because he was a member at the Lakes, and he mentioned that this tournament was on. I didn't hear anything about it. And at the time, I knew no other amputees. So, you know, I was sort of a bit of a loner and led myself, I suppose, down an able-bodied life at that stage. This nice person at the driving range kept saying, you've got to go, and I'm going, no, not interested. You know, I was thinking, not being rude, but I thought, oh, God, disabled people, I don't really want to hang out with them. And it's just, you know, at the time, I was quite young and quite rude, I suppose, but I found myself not really interested. But he kept saying, look, you won't get a chance to play at the Lakes and this, that, and the other. So I went, oh, bugger it, I'll go. Yeah. The Lakes is obviously a really prestigious course. It's where the Australian Open is in 2 weeks' time. So, to get the opportunity to play there was one thing, but I suppose meeting the amputees for the first time was a bit daunting, but there were some really great guys there. From then, we sort of formed a group, and we've set up Amputee Golf Australia after that, and I was part of one of the leading, one of the founding members, which was fantastic, yeah, really good experience.
You mentioned earlier that you're a little bit shy at first, and is that something that's common, I think, with disabled players, or when they first have their amputation and the first time they get involved in disability golf? Is that something that's common or not?
Yeah, definitely. So when I lost my hand, I suppose I never had, because it's through the hands, you don't really go to physiotherapists, you don't go to, I went to a rehab centre once, I really didn't get anything out of it, so I just sort of brushed it to the side. I can understand leg amputees, they get a lot more support and you know, physiotherapy to get them back up and walking, whereas a hand, you sort of go, well, there's nothing really we can do for you, we'll sew you up and send you on your way. So I didn't get to meet everyone. I didn't get to, you know, sit in a hospital with someone coming in and chatting to me. So I suppose my road was a bit different from other people. They get that initial contact, whether it be an amputee or whether it be someone who knows one, in the hospital. I never got that. So that's, I suppose, what made me a bit shyer than most. But we try to, in Australia, we try to get as many people, if we hear about it, someone out to see them, say g'day, and just say it's not the end of the world to them. So,
you started, as you mentioned earlier, Amputee Golf Australia. And
yes.
I guess that what you've just mentioned about getting some support to the new amputees, is that something that you focus on within your association?
We do try to. The way I suppose Australia's run, it's very, very difficult to get names of amputees. The laws, I suppose, don't really give you any help. The government's quite strong in their privacy laws in Australia, so it makes it quite difficult. But if we hear about someone through a friend of a friend, through a prosthetist or something like that, we try to get someone out to have a chat to them, whether it be myself or whether it be anyone else from Amputee Golf. We always try and, you know, do our best to get someone out to see them. So
what was it like in those first few years of Amputee Golf Australia? Because it was obviously a new association. How were you received and how did you find the structure and how did you find getting more people involved? How did that all happen?
I suppose we had two things in mind at that time. What we'd heard about was that the US were running quite a big tournament in 2004, and the Canadian Open, Amputee Open, was before that. So we sort of set a goal to get us all together. You know, once every 6 to 8 weeks, play a round of golf and sort of chat golf, and you know, there wasn't much more to it to that.
How many was there of you at that stage?
Probably 8 or so.
Okay. Yeah.
There was more around, obviously, that we saw at Jeff's tournament, the 2002 World Series. But in the Sydney area, there was about 8 of us, and we just meet up and have a round of golf. And our goal was to, I suppose, go to this tournament over in the States, see how it was all run, play. I think the Balassa Championship was on the week before, so we ended up doing the British, the Canadian, and the US Opens all in 3 weeks. And it was more of a social aim at that stage. We had plans in the background to set up a tournament of our own. We had a member up at the Gold Coast at Coolangatta Tweed Club, who offered up his course as a tournament venue. And I suppose from there we sort of drove, would have been a year into it, but started driving our own tournament. And once we were over in the States, we wanted to really, try and get the States players down as well as our own. And it really started from there. So it probably would have been 2 years after we met up that we really got the ball rolling. But the first couple of years were quite messy. But, a lot of interest in the first few years from non-golfers, which was quite interesting. But to keep the, the new players coming through is the hardest thing. We always have a set number of players of probably 30 to 40 in Australia that go to pretty much every tournament. Mm-hmm. But it's getting those new ones through and keeping them we find the hardest thing. So.
Australia's pretty advanced in what it does for disabled sport, and certainly the way that it views disabled sport, for sure. You've obviously got the Invictus Games down there, or I think it finishes today, if I'm not mistaken. And you did a great job of the Paralympics when you had the Olympics down there. So what is it in the mentality, in the Australian mentality, that is really, I would say, it's groundbreaking, to be honest?
Oh, I suppose it's that sporting background. Australia's, they're a funny mob. We sort of, for a population of 20 million, we always bat above our level in sport. We seem to compete on every stage, whether it be, the Olympics and this, that and the other. We always seem to have someone up there. So just a nation of sporting nuts, to be honest. We love our sport, whether it be, soccer, football, cricket, golf, they're sort of our major sports, and we'll follow them all the way through, and swimming, anything like that, we'll give a try once or twice, and always seem to have someone up the top. So even that will then feed down into the disabled ranks. You still have people hungry to compete, and with that background of sporting nation, you're really keen to do it and do it on a world level, I suppose.
And even forgetting sport, if you just think about society now, does the government make it relatively easy for disabled people? Is it pretty open to accessible facilities, accessible programs to get people with disability into work? Is it relatively open for that?
Yeah, I found it's definitely changed in the last 10 years. I suppose previous, when I lost my hand, there wasn't really anything around. The government funding was quite low, if any. What we're finding now is that, you hear ads on the radio for placement of work for disabled people and things like that. So, it's changed full circuit. So definitely a lot more out in the open. You don't seem to see a prejudice against people with disabilities these days as much. Whether I'm sort of immune to it now because I've lost my hand for more than half my life, I don't know. But I just seem to get people staring at me like they did in the early days. So,
right.
It's quite interesting.
You're now the president of Amputee Golf New South Wales. So I assume that that's a... Does that have any connection to Amputee Golf Australia?
Yes, Yeah, so Amputee Golf New South Wales, I suppose, was the original board for Amputee Golf Australia. It was all sort of run from New South Wales because that's basically where we all were at the time.
Yeah.
AG New South Wales has been, well, it's the oldest state organisation in Australia. I think we've been going, it'd be 12 years now, whereas the Australian body's about 13 years. We've basically hosted tournaments every year. We have, you know, I think probably eight just golf days just to get people involved every year as well. So it's its own little world. I was president of Australia and president of New South Wales at the same time, and that got a bit too much work-wise. So quite happy just doing the New South Wales thing at the moment.
Yeah, no, it feels it's tough.
Yep.
Getting all the work done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get the impression that golf has been really essential for you. So can you walk me through what golf means to you and how it's had a positive impact on your life?
Yeah. I suppose one thing is when I got married, one of my wedding vows was I get to play golf every Saturday morning. So
it was, only in Australia. Australia is that going to happen. That's great.
Yep, so I thought I'd just bring that one up. But golf, it just brings so many different people together. I find you can sit and play with, I played at the Invictus Games, you know, the group behind John Keyes, the ex-Prime Minister of New Zealand. I've played with celebrities before. I've played with, you know, people that are battling. So, you know, everyone is on an even field when you get on a golf course. It's just one of those sports that can really, really bring everyone together and you can just enjoy each other's company, and I think it's brilliant. So.
What have you learned about yourself by playing golf?
That I need some mental work, I think. Yeah. No. By playing golf. I've probably grown up through golf a lot more. My mental strength has definitely improved. Physically, you know, I've never had too many issues with my body or anything like that. So I suppose it's driven me to become mentally stronger, and it's reflected back into my work life and things like that. So, I've really probably over the last probably 5 or so years, I've really noticed the difference mentally. And, it reflects from my golf game into my life. So,
yeah, the two are pretty connected, aren't they? It's difficult to be one thing off a golf course, another thing on it.
Absolutely.
What kind of work do you do, Stephen?
I'm a truck sales manager. So the Hino and Iveco brand, I run a team of about 15. We're the second biggest dealer New South Wales, I believe, at the moment, and we're looking to be number one. So,
okay.
We're getting up there.
I'm going to go back to your work as president of Golf Australia when you were that, and also mm-hmm. very much so for the president of Amputee Golf New South Wales. But with all that experience and all that knowledge, both as a player and as an administrator, if you had the resources and could make, let's say, 2 or 3 decisions that would positively impact golf for the disabled, what would you do?
I suppose the first thing I would do is allow us the opportunity to speak to people. So it'd be that privacy laws that I was speaking of earlier.
Yep.
Open up the privacy laws to bodies like ours so we can reach more people. The second one would be probably on a true sporting level. Look at that Paralympics, look at that Invictus Games, look at those sort of things and get a body, even though we're trying, obviously, but really drive that, get the golf into those sort of sports. They'd be the main two I'd really look at doing. And obviously, you know, anything we do obviously costs money, so that'd be a government thing. We'd look at some funding from the government, to get these sort of bodies up and running. They'd be my main three things I'd look at.
I guess, I mean, we know that it's possible to get people with disabilities into the game once they've seen the game. Because at that stage, then they look at him, oh, if he can do it, I can do it. And so clearly that is quite a big issue. Is there anything else that we should be doing to attract people with disability to our sport?
I suppose promoting the fact of the handicap system and how fair it is for golfing people, for disabled people, you've got that opportunity, as I said, to play with anyone and compete on the day. So that'd be my main thing about golf. Really, really push the fact that, mate, you're even as the guy down the road who's, you know, a professional. On the day, you can play against him and you can compete against him. So, work on that. Also, the one thing that we're looking at the moment in Australia, and it's not our body so much, but there are a few around, looking at things like accessibility scooters on the golf course, being able to go on to different golf courses. So there's a few in Sydney that are open-minded and allow them to drive in the bunkers on the greens for, you know, paraplegics or people that have lost their legs. So that sort of thing, it's just getting the courses a bit more open-minded. You know, I've played with guys like that before, and it really does not damage the course at all, no more than your foot would, sort of thing. So,
That's just changing preconceptive ideas, though, isn't it, really? Because I think if we look at the average golf director, if you say, well, we're going to have somebody with disability playing the golf course, they might just think immediately somebody in a wheelchair, because obviously that's the symbol, the international symbol for disability. And they might never have seen a paragolfer, or they might never have seen a mobility scooter. They might just think of somebody going on a wheelchair and, you know, all the damage that could be caused by a very thin, tired wheelchair going across a green.
Yeah.
And that's what they see in their head, and they don't understand, they don't get it. So we have to change, we have to educate them to understand that.
Yeah, just perception, isn't it?
Yeah.
So getting the right story out.
Absolutely. So what does the future hold for Stephen?
Well, the next couple of weeks are pretty big in my golfing career. We've got the Australian Open.
Yep.
So we're playing that obviously at the Lakes. That'll be interesting. I think over the 3 days that we're playing, they're expecting over 100,000 people on the course, and obviously the big TV audience, so a bit nerve-wracking. And then the week after that, we're down to the World Cup of Golf down in Melbourne. And that will be sensational. So Australian team of six against, I believe, a full European team, which will be interesting. See how we compete on the world stage. So we don't seem to get across to Europe as well, me personally anyway, but the Aussies don't seem to get across to Europe to really compete against those guys. So it'll be great to actually have them down here and see how we go against them.
Yeah, I think it's groundbreaking stuff, and certainly the AAAC is going to be, I think, a superb event, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm going to get down there for a few days myself, so that'll be nice to see, get our lads down there and just see what happens and see what the reaction is. And I think you're right, what you just said, you've got 100,000 people there and thereabouts that will be on the golf course, and a massive TV audience. So that's really going to spread the message that golfers with disability are just like everybody other golfer. The golfers first, and after that, then just let their ability show through. So that would be great.
Absolutely.
And certainly the ranking has helped, I think, as well. So I know you sit pretty high on the ranking, and, you know, it's nice to see some Australians on there. And I know that we'll have some good news about the ranking within the next couple of weeks, which hopefully will be available before we get down there, so we'll be able to explain all that to you as well, so that'll be good. So out of all the things that you've learned from playing golf, is there two or three takeaways that you think others might be able to learn from?
I suppose one, don't start unless you're committed.
Okay.
That'd be my first one, because it's definitely a type of sport you have to commit yourself to if you want to get some really good results.
That's like any sport, though, isn't it, really? If you're going to get to the top, if you're going to get to be an international or even a national level player, you've got to commit to this.
The other thing, I suppose, is, you know, people have got to understand that it's a mental game more so than a physical game. You know, you can't just go out there and blast it and hope the ball goes in. It doesn't work that way. It's planning out courses, holes, shots, things like that. So get your mental game strong and just go out and enjoy yourself. Go out with your friends, go out with your, you know, go out to compete. It's all good fun. So.
Do you want to take you back to that day that you were on the water ski, on the water, on your ski?
Yeah.
You lost your hand, got tangled in the rope. And if you could be magically with someone who's got a similar disability to yourself, and it might be an accident similar to that, or it might be some other kind of accident.
Yeah.
What advice would you want to offer them?
I think the best thing to offer people would be just sort of get on with life. Don't sit there and dwell on what's happened. There's things you can do. There's, you know, numerous things that you can still do that you'll enjoy. No use being sad about it. No use being upset. It's happened. Move on and really start living your life again. So that's what I'd say to them.
That's wonderful advice. And Stephen, I'm looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks' time, and hopefully we'll get to share a beer after one of the rounds.
Look forward to it.
If people wanted to reach you, how could they find you?
Probably email's the best, I would say. So my email address is president@amputeegolfnsw.org.au. So president@amputeegolfnsw.org.au.
Super. Well, Stephen, thanks very much for your time. And as I say, looking forward to seeing you in a few weeks' time.
Pleasure. Thanks so much, Tony.
All the best. Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Ping. Play your best.
Our partners are very important to Edgar, and I would like to introduce you to a short, true story told by Ping.
In 1959, Carsten designed a putter that he went on to call the 1A. This was probably the first putter ever designed by a professional engineer. It looked nothing like the golf world had ever seen. The head was made from material never used before in club making. The face was floating, attached only at the heel and toe. Carsten had invented perimeter weighting. He knew by moving the weight around the perimeter of the putter head, it would drastically minimize twisting on off-centered struck putts. The stable head produced a level of forgiveness and accuracy that made the game easier. With his first prototype design of the 1A putter, he drilled a hole in the head and put a shaft in it. When he putted a ball on the floor, the design made a ping sound. Carsten immediately recognized the significance of the sound. Not only was his new putter a step forward in putter design, it had a unique musical marketing angle and subsequently provided a distinctive name for the business. Ping. What other name could he call it?
Ping. Play your best. This was an Edgar Player story supported by Ping, helping golfers to play their best. For more information about Edgar, please visit edgargolf.com. Stay tuned for the next Edgar podcast. Ping. Play your best.